So, Israel broke the ceasefire on March 18th, and what came after was actually even more brutality, more onslaught, if you can imagine even more brutality after 18 months of genocide. They killed over 500 people just after it broke the truce, and many of them were women and children. And you might have seen the news of paramedics who were handcuffed, executed, and buried in a mass grave as well. And a worker from the Red Crescent said, "We're digging them out in their uniforms with their gloves on. They were here to save lives. Instead, they ended up in a mass grave. These ambulances have been buried in the sand. There's a UN vehicle here buried in the sand. A bulldozer, Israeli forces bulldozer, has buried them." So journalists also continue to be executed and hospitals destroyed. And this is the so-called reprieve that Palestinians had, and it's come to an end. Israel has fully resumed the bombardment, and this is while its soldiers, its politicians, and allies keep cheering them on. And all the while, we've had statements of restraint and a peaceful solution from world leaders. But this is all it's done is actually mask their support, their ongoing diplomatic and military support for the Zionist state. But on the other hand, as well, because Israel's aggression has been particularly heinous, openly breaking all rules of international conventions and norms, and its crimes are on show for the whole world to see, there's been a resurgence of the argument, which is something to the effect of Israel being a rogue state that has gone too far, and that the US is helpless in the face of this, or is a reluctant ally that's been dragged along. Well, I want to say that beyond this argument actually being way too charitable and soft on the US, it makes them out to be reluctant participants who are unwillingly providing financial and military aid while Israel is forcing their hand. This narrative really is far from the truth. Israel has never just been a passive supporter. It is a very active and enthusiastic champion of Israel. So in this talk, I'll basically go through that and argue that the US, to the US, Israel is not an uncontrollable ally, but a strategic asset. And we can see that just by looking at some of the more recent events. The genocide has not actually pushed the US to put pressure on Israel to try to rein in its violence and aggression. The opposite has happened. The US has committed more military and more money to ensure their success in Lebanon. And from the perspective of the US, this victory has paid off. Israel has, in their eyes, proven itself a reliable state that can overpower its regional neighbors and protect American interests in the region, all without having to have American troops on the ground. So this talk will go through the relationship between the US and Israel and why this relationship has been a mutually beneficial one. I also want to go through some key historical periods that show the US is not a reluctant partner, but an active champion, and also why the genocide in Gaza and their expansion to the Middle East is just the latest example. And finally, I also just want to touch on Trump and why him being in the White House hasn't actually changed the relationship between the US and Israel in any fundamental way. So I first want to start by just explaining the foundations of Israel. If you went to the Balfour session, you probably already have heard some of this, so I'll go over it a bit quickly. So since its inception, Israel has been a colonial project, with Zionism being its political ideology. Their stated aim is to establish a Jewish homeland which looked to imperialist powers, mainly like Britain, which was a large empire at the time, to help it with this goal. And Palestine wasn't even the first location considered. Actually, in the next slide, Theodor Herzl, the founding father of Zionism, he said, should we choose Palestine or Argentina? And saying that they would take what is given to us and what is selected by Jewish public opinion. And the Holocaust was also used to justify the need for an exclusively Jewish state, as protection against persecution. But Zionism existed long before that, dating back to the 1890s. So, Zionists didn't want a refuge. They actually wanted a state to govern with them at the head of it. And the Balfour Declaration, which is on the next slide, basically secured for the Zionists backing from Britain, which was then a dominant world power. And British support wasn't motivated by any concern for persecuted Jews. Actually, Balfour himself was a known anti-Semite, and he pushed for anti-immigration laws to stop Jewish refugees from being able to enter Britain. But for them, thank you. Britain served, sorry, for the British, Israel served a dual purpose. First, it resolved what they saw as the Jewish problem, while also creating a colonial stronghold in a geopolitically crucial region that is rich in oil and also is very strategically located and vital for trade routes. And in the next slide, Winston Churchill, who later became the Prime Minister, he supported this project very, and it really explains actually what they were motivated by. He said, "A Jewish state under the protection of the Jewish crown might comprise 3 or 4 million Jews, would from every point of view be beneficial, and would be especially in harmony with the truest interests of the British Empire." And so he also went on to say that Britain should just take control of this land, especially with the significance of the Suez Canal, even if it actually cost them a lot of money. This would still be important. After the collapse of the Ottoman Empire after World War I, Britain now was able to redraw the maps, the regional in the Middle East, and basically be able to expand its control. And they saw that Israel really fit in with this and that it helped actually further their capacity to control the region. And to be able to establish this state, mass migration to Palestine was encouraged, actually, so much so that persecuted Jewish refugees who would try to leave Nazi Germany weren't allowed to go anywhere except Palestine. And now that Britain is in control of Palestine, they encourage Zionist migration and land confiscation just continue to escalate, along with the mass expulsion of Palestinians. And despite Palestinian resistance to all of this, the Zionist forces had economic and military backing, so they could actually push forward in the face of resistance. So I just want to quickly now talk about the Nakba and the massacres as well that laid the basis for this new state. So in the lead up to Israel's creation, Zionist militias launched mass attacks on Palestinian communities, either to kill them or to terrorize the rest into fleeing. And I have a photo of one of the most famous massacres as well was the Deir Yassin massacre in 1948. 100 Palestinian villages, including women, children, and the elderly, were slaughtered by the Zionist paramilitary groups. And survivors just recounted atrocities, including executions and mutilations, all designed to spread fear amongst Palestinians. And this was not really an isolated event. Between 1947 and 48, Zionist militias carried out so many massacres to clear Palestinian land. In another village, Tantura, they killed over 200 Palestinian men who were lined up and executed. In another two other villages, they expelled thousands under the hot sun, marching them across, and many died from exhaustion and dehydration. And this also brings us to when entire villages were just razed to the ground and the start of the Nakba, or the catastrophe of 750,000 Palestinians being expelled. But all of this is not just just aggression for aggression's sake. The Zionist leaders understood that to establish this exclusive Jewish state, they had to ethnically cleanse Palestine. And so this violent campaign, backed by the colonial powers, set the foundations for the Israeli state. And very quickly post that, Israel then became a very important player, not just in its own little region, but just on the world stage of world imperialism. So after World War II, Israel was awarded the majority of Palestinian land. There was an empty promise that there would be one state for Arabs and one state for Jews. This was really never satisfactory to the Zionists. They wanted to expand beyond any agreed upon borders and pursue the kind of greater Israel, which is encompassing much bigger borders than they've accepted. And this meant continue to drive as well the annexation of land, but also in Lebanon, Syria, and beyond. And to them, the existence of a Palestinian population has always been just basically a barrier and an obstacle to the expansion, which has meant that the Israel's war on Palestinians has never actually stopped and has continued. And so from early Zionist militias all the way to the IDF, they've just continued this ethnic cleansing to service the colonial project. Okay, so now I'll just get to what the talk is also about, the US-Israel partnership as well. So prior to World War II, it has always, the Zionist state has functioned as an outpost of Western imperialism. It just projecting Western power in the region, enforces their domination, and has suppressed resistance. And people might know as well, as Joe Biden, said in 1986, were there not an Israel, the United States would have to invent an Israel to protect our interests in the region. So this relationship between the US and Israel really took shape after World War II. British power and the British Empire had declined. There was new reshaping of who was coming out on top, and the US has now become the world dominant imperialist power. But Israel continued to retain its role, but now it was doing it for Washington. And there's also another emerging imperialist tension. It's the USS versus the US versus the USSR or the Soviet Union. They're imperialist rivals, and they were both competing for influence in the Middle East, both seeing it as a region of immense strategic importance. Why is that the case? Because it has vast oil reserves, has key global trade routes, and it's positioned between crucial centers of capital. So whoever had control of the Middle East, you had an advantage over your imperialist rival. And at the time as well, the US provided a critical base for being able to mount attacks against Russia and also defend its European allies. And I think this really also shows that the alliance with Israel is not really this kind of ideological connection, but it's really strategic and remains to this day. So all the rhetoric around common values, shared vision of democracy, really is just a cover for the real motive. Israel has been a stable and unwavering ally in a very volatile region. It governs a very loyal population to the United States, unlike the Arab nations who rule over populations who rightfully so reject US imperialism and its interference in the region. The US has very much been conscious of the role that Israel has played. So the president, Harry Truman, was actually the first world leader to recognize Israel as a legitimate state just 11 minutes after it was created in 1948. Truman was also a known anti-Semite. There's a common thread, like people who support Israel don't tend to be great people. So he wasn't really driven by his, again, desire to provide Jews with a safe homeland. He explained his motivation best in his own words when he said, "The Middle East is a land bridge between the Eurasian and African continents. Millions of tons of commerce are transmitted through it annually. Its own products, especially petroleum, are essential to Europe and the Western world." And also Jimmy Carter later on said, "I would like to emphasize in the strongest possible terms that our aid for Israel is not only altruistic indeed, our close relationship with Israel is in the moral and strategic interest of the United States. There is a mutual relationship and there is a mutual benefit and a mutual commitment." That is because our commitment to Israel's security and well-being, and it's because Israel's security is so closely linked to the security of the United States of America, I am opposed to an independent Palestinian state. Because in my own judgment and in the judgment of many leaders in the Middle East, including Arab leaders, this would be a destabilizing factor in the Middle East and would certainly not serve the United States' interest. So very clear in terms of what is motivating them around the support. And of course, you know, today, Joe Biden, Trump and so on have supported and reiterated this support. And Trump, I just want to say that then actually when you look at all the previous administrations, Trump's support is simply just a continuation of this decades-long support for the Zionist state. So, and for them, time and time again, Israel has proven itself very worthy of this support, mainly through military victories that align with the American interests, but also through its role in being able to discipline its neighboring states that dare to butt up against American control. So I want to talk about the Arab, the 1967 Israeli war, because that's, I think, is one of the most key points and is an example of Israel's role in the region. So in 1967, this was the first test of their relationship and a turning point where Israel decisively proved itself to be very capable to the U.S. So there were Arab armies made up of multiple countries, including Jordan, Egypt, and Syria. They actually suffered a humiliating defeat at Israel's hand, who then, after this, was able to solidify its position in the region. And at the end of this six-day war, Israel was able to capture Jerusalem, the West Bank, the Golan Heights in Syria, the Gaza Strip, the whole of Jerusalem, and also the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt. And the US was very happy with this. It even circulated a document within the State Department. And the document said, Israel has probably has done more for the US in the Middle East in relation to money and effort invested than any of our so-called allies and friends elsewhere around the world since the Second World War. In the Far East, we can almost get nobody to help us in Vietnam. Here, the Israelis won the war single-handedly, have taken us off the hook, and have served our interests as well as theirs. So again, the US really expressing and explaining the relationship to Israel in the clearest terms. And so after this period, they really set out to strengthen this relationship. And since this time, this alliance has just been a cornerstone to their US Middle East policy. And so that has meant increasing military aid, you know, sending Pentagon weapons and technology without any expectation of payment, because again, it's about maintaining a strategic ally. And the US has just been responsible in fueling this Israeli aggression. They did it again in 1973 in the Yom Kippur War, airlifting weapons to ensure that Israel was able to go up against its Arab neighbors. And they also helped with the 1982 invasion of Lebanon. So much so that they, the state secretary described Israel as the largest American aircraft carrier in the world that cannot be sunk. Okay, so I just with that in mind, I wanted to address a common argument that's sometimes made that tries to explain the relationship between the US and why the US really backs Israel to the hilt. And usually it's boiled down to something along the lines of, you know, it's the influence of the Zionist lobby in the US on US institutions and so on. And so often people refer to AIPAC, which is the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, as the prime example of this Zionist influence. And so for people who don't know, like lobbies, they're basically groups or individuals who push to shape US policy to act in the best interest of Israel. They also work to undermine institutions or politicians who are seen to be hostile to Israel. If anyone's following what's going on, obviously, in America and around the campuses and deportations of activists, there's groups that have just targeted these students, by doxing them, pushing the uni administrations to expel them, or like Mahmoud Khalil, we have the Anti-Defamation League, boasting about sending names of activists they've tracked to, you know, be the next person to get deported by immigration. I think that, you know, while lobbying groups have undoubtedly played a role and do play a role in whipping up support for Israel, they're not really the ones that dictate US policy. The reality of that is much, much more calculated. US policy institutions and politicians align with Zionism not because of external pressure or because these politicians just receive donations from groups like AIPAC. Most of them are actually just Zionists by default, because Israel serves American interests. So if you want to run American capitalism, you have to be prepared to defend its interests outside of American borders. And Israel is key to that. And you don't really need the Zionist lobby to make those connections for you. But of course, you'd be very friendly with them. And so now I just want to talk about Israel's independent ambitions in the Middle East, beyond just the interests of the US. So as I've said, just as the US doesn't just act solely based on Zionist influence, Israel is also not a puppet of the US. The Israeli state's aggressive expansionism, its land grabs and ethnic cleansing, they're not really dictated by American policy. They're pursued independently. But the key thing is that these ambitions still fit in with the US's vision for the region. A stronger Israel means that an imperialist rival for the US like Iran, who's been basically a thorn in their side, can be pushed back. And instead, you have a much more reliable ally like Israel who is able to dominate the region. And as I said, Israel has the greater Israel vision, and they want to take more land beyond Palestine, including the neighboring countries. And so the attacks that we see today are just part of a broader history of violence and aggression to try to fulfill this ambition. And Israel's invasion of South Lebanon last year is not the first time they've done it. So it's been in 1978, 1982, and 2000. And each time, 2006, each time they've left mass destruction and displacement. So during the Lebanese Civil War, Israel invaded Lebanon. They brought, again, more death and misery. And it did this because it wanted to reshape the Middle East in its favor, first by crushing Palestinian resistance organizations, annexing land, and also removing Syrian forces and trying to install a pro-Israel government in Lebanon. And so while the U.S. was not always the driving force behind these particular actions, it still saw an opportunity to advance its own strategic interests, and they still backed the invasion as well. And so during this massacre as well, during this period, they facilitated the Sabra and Shatila massacre, where they basically allowed thousands of Palestinians to be slaughtered. They were able to expel Palestinian resistance groups and basically were able to occupy South Lebanon all the way till 2002, but that was until, all the way to the year 2000. But there was now, in the year 2000, a growing military power of Hezbollah, which forced it to withdraw. And so Israel was not very happy with this. So in 2006, they invaded again, first with heavy bombardment and then with ground troops. And this was a 33-day war that ended for Israel in a very rare and humiliating defeat. So despite it actually having a much more superior military, Hezbollah did something that was the unthinkable, which is being able to push back the IDF. And what this did for them, Hezbollah, was boost their credibility in the region, but also strengthened its allies, most notably Hamas and Iran. But fast forward to today and the genocide, Israel saw an opportunity to once and for all get rid of Hezbollah and be able to just not have any enemies that can challenge them. So it launched the invasion of Lebanon. It has devastated South Lebanon and assassinated essentially all the key leading figures of Hezbollah, most notably Hassan Nasrallah, who's like the leader. And Iran, with all of its talk of defending Palestine and standing up to Israel, has clearly not been able to put up any meaningful resistance, even to attacks that have been on Iran itself. So Iran has, so Israel was actually able to attack the Iranian consulate in 2024, and it took out military commanders. And Iran's retaliation and rockets, they were just actually intercepted before they even got to Israel's borders, with the help of like big powers like the US and the UK. And, you know, so shaken by these missiles and everything and promises to pay, they were able to assassinate Hamas's leader as well, or their chief, on Iranian soil. And any harsh punishment that was promised never came. And that's because Iran knew that it can't really in any way stand up to Israel without being a target and being obliterated itself. And so despite its crimes of genocide, Israel has emerged as the dominant regional power. It's defanged Hezbollah. And also by doing that, they've weakened an ally of Iran because it took out a huge section of its supporters. And so Israel has made it clear that those who refuse to submit will be crushed, of course, done with the backing of the US. And so that's why, you know, the US has had a long-term strategy to try to weaken Iran. And here Israel did just that. And that's why the US was very happy and encouraged the latest offensive on southern Lebanon. Because for them, being able to weaken Iran is a strategic win. And for Israel, being able to take more land is a win. And so that's why Netanyahu gave, like, it's very sickening, but he gave Donald Trump the pager, a golden pager. That's because for them, the invasion of Lebanon has actually just been a trophy to both of them, both of them being able to actually get what they want out of it. So I've spoken about, like, Western imperialism, but I just want to quickly talk about the Arab states, because without their cooperation and, support, Israel would not be this bold in its aggression. And even before the war, there's just so many examples of them having normalization talks. We have Egypt, which supports the siege on Gaza, but even before the genocide has facilitated the starving of Gazans by closing the border, and has worked with Israel to be able to repress Palestinians. That's because, like all capitalist states, Arab regimes have their own ambitions and they really don't care about the fate of Palestinians. They actually can put pressure on Israel. They have lots of economic leverage, access to huge, vast oil reserves. And Egypt holds the Suez Canal, which is a crucial trade route. If you threaten to stop any of that, you would actually be able to, you know, send a message to Israel, but they do nothing to help Palestinians. And that's because their interests don't lie with Palestinians. It aligns with maintaining stability and profitability on the global capitalist system. And so that's why, like, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and most of them just align themselves with the US, because it's the most dominant power. And that means actually they are better off for it. And they don't really as well operate on the basis of, like, ethnic or just a shared identity or a national or religious solidarity even. Their only loyalty is to their power and their profit. And that means if you need to align with the US and Israel while they commit a genocide, so be it. So that's why it's not really just like the US and Israel on one side in the kind of camps, and then the Arab states or the states of the Middle East on the other. Instead, all of these different states are shifting and maneuvering, basically trying to form alliances based on their self-interest, and who cares about Palestinians in their eyes. But the other thing is, as well, you know, Israel has also played a role in undermining popular dissent. It's you know, it's committed to maintaining its position in the region. And so it wants to crush anyone that wants to come up against it. So any local resistance, thwarting democratic movements, all of these actually threaten and pose a threat to their dominance. And the US very much has an interest in that. And of course, Israel is able to help. So even if we go all the way back to 1954, it really was able to discipline Arab regimes. Sorry, I don't have a title, but this is in the 1954 Suez Canal crisis. The government nationalized the Suez Canal. Israel's response was to invade and try to overthrow the Egyptian president because they saw it as a vital trade route. You can see how actually central it is to the region. And it wanted to maintain it in Western hands so that the French and British are able to protect their profits. But lately now there's not that much hostility between them and Egypt. It's actually just backed regional powers like in Egypt, helped crush the Arab Spring in 2011, a movement for democracy. And it's a movement that also stood with Palestine. And Sisi, which is the president of Egypt today, is very much a close ally with these Western imperialists. And they all have a shared interest in propping up these dictators because they're allies with Western imperialism. And Israel has just been helping all of these regimes keep a lid on dissent and stop any grassroots movements being able to challenge, gaining ground or being able to challenge the dictators, because revolutions that push for democracy and back Palestine are a threat, not just to dictators like Egypt, but also to Israel, who really needs their cooperation. Okay, so just to start to sum up, and to talk about Israel today. So Israel has not only continued its genocide, but actually escalated its aggression by invading Lebanon. And the US's response was not to curtail its bloodlust or see the invasion as a step too far. Instead, the opposite has happened. They've continued to pour money, to send weapons, to carry out the assault. America has committed to even sending troops and warships in the Middle East to make sure that no one is able to challenge stop Israel's military campaign. And we do have to say that Trump's election has emboldened Israel. So his vision, if you saw that sickening video of like displacing Palestinians and transforming Gaza into a luxury resort, even though it's shocking, it's actually just already established US and Israel policy. And his actions aren't really that different from Biden. Biden reiterated his comments and support for Israel during the genocide. And Trump's manner or words can seem like they're just a significant kind of departure from the norms of international relations or the kind of established diplomacy and the ways that you talk about the US position on Israel-Palestine, but I think that's not really the case. I think the best way to see Trump's action isn't to look at it as if he's throwing out the rule book on the norms of international relations, but rather he's just actually skipping to the last page on what they see as their vision for the region. Because much of the genocide didn't happen under him. It happened under Biden. The invasion of Lebanon happened under Biden. And Biden's last act was to actually approve more money and more funding to Israel. And while the White House argued for de-escalation, they continued as well to say that Israel had a right and a responsibility to bomb Beirut because they were targeting Hamas leaders. And even when the pages exploded, killing thousands of people, killing hundreds and injuring thousands, including children, Biden said nothing. Because to the US, actually now, the Middle East is now in safe hands. It's firmly under the thumb of its most reliable ally. With Israel serving as the region's enforcer, the US can now just shift its focus on other much more pressing imperialist tensions, mainly China. And so this logic isn't just like a Trumpian type of logic. oh, it's not just unique to him, or it's not just the product of the far right inside Israel that they're more aggressive. It's just imperialist logic. And that's because imperialism isn't, or imperialist policy isn't just the choice made by individual politicians. It's basically the inevitable outcome of competition under capitalism. So in a system that's built on profit and competition, all of these world leaders are vying for dominance. They want to ensure that their own capitalist class has the greatest edge. And this competition regularly breaks out into war between all of these nation states. And the US and Israel are just allies because their capitalist interests align. So that's why I think it's very crucial to understand the dynamics of the US and Israel alliance. As I said, Israel is not just a rogue state. It's an instrument of empire, and the US isn't being dragged along into supporting Israel. It does so willingly because Israel plays a crucial role in securing American interests. Start to sum up. With Israel basically resuming its most brutal war on Gaza and expanding further into Lebanon and Syria, and Trump has given his full backing to whatever they want to do, the situation in the Middle East is just going to escalate even further. But if we want to confront Israel's crime, we also have to oppose the systems that enables them. And I think that's the first and most important step. Because if we want to end Palestinian oppression, we have to challenge the border structures of US imperialism. And that would mean dismantling the system that produces it, which is capitalism itself. So, yeah.